ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The world right now is a disaster. It's easy to feel helpless. But there was a moment when millions of people around the world said enough. I'm Sisson Kim Simong. Join me for Boycott, the fight to end apartheid, how Australians joined others around the world to push back against racism and won.
Whites only teams, we thought that to the average Australian, that would be despicable.
Boycott, the fight to end apartheid. Search for ABC Rewind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are suppression orders out of control in Victoria? Hi, Damien Carrick here. This is the Law Report on ABC Radio National. The State Attorney General, Sonia Kilkenny, is currently considering reforms to Victoria's Open Courts Act with regard to granting suppression orders on mental health grounds. It follows widespread concern in the media about the use of a suppression order lifted late last year to prevent the identification of Tom Silvani, the son of a well-known football player who was on trial for sexual assault. More recently, the Melbourne Press Club has released a report that argues that public interest journalism in Victoria has reached a crisis point. I'm joined by Michael Bachelard. He's one of Australia's leading investigative reporters. He works for The Age newspaper. He's president of the Melbourne Press Club and he's a winner of many awards, including the Gold Walkley. I'm also joined by Associate Professor Jason Bosland. He's an expert in suppression orders based at the University of Melbourne Law School. His research led to the adoption of Victoria's 2013 Open Courts Act. Now, Michael and Jason share concerns about open justice, and they're also on a similar page when it comes to how those concerns might be addressed. But Jason and Michael have a significant disagreement about the report commissioned by the Melbourne Press Club. I should point out that this Melbourne Press Club report focuses on a number of issues, including freedom of information, but our discussion today will look at suppression orders. Michael, the report writers, Monash University academics Alicia McMillan and Associate Professor Johan Lidberg, did a number of things. They interviewed 12 senior courts and investigative reporters from five major news organisations. What did those journalists say about suppression orders?
They said basically that the regime in Victoria, not just suppression orders, the vibe, the culture of the courts in Victoria has become increasingly unfriendly towards journalists and journalism in the past few years. On suppression orders specifically, those interviewees said that they were very often not given notice of suppression orders, that the reasons for suppression orders being issued were often not published, that suppression orders were being issued in large numbers, particularly in the Magistrates' Court, on an interim basis.
That's the lower court in Victoria.
That's right, which is supposed to be then returnable, you know, at the earliest convenience. But some of those interim orders are lasting for 6 months or more until they come back, and that they act in effect as a suppression for, you know, the duration of the early parts of the case until they can be reheard. It's often the case that the media, as is required under the Open Courts Act, are not getting 3 days' notice to argue against a suppression order, but that orders are being made immediately. And as I said, no written reasons given. The lawyers tell me that when they apply for the transcript, they're often turned down, or it takes weeks to get the audio of the hearing to figure it out. And in any event, there are so many orders being issued that media organisations have neither the time nor the financial capacity to appear in every suppression order case. And so, anecdotally, from these practitioners in the court, combined with difficulty of accessing documents and a kind of a cultural aversion, if you like, to journalists being in some magistrates' courts particularly, that this is creating an environment where it's sort of unfriendly to journalism and open justice in Victoria.
Jason, what are your thoughts on reading these interviews or extracts of these interviews in the report? Is the system unfriendly to journalists and open justice?
I think it probably is, and I think that the interview responses are the real contribution that this report makes to informing the public about what is actually going on when it comes to open justice and the difficulties that the media face.
So, Jason, you found the analysis or what the journalist said in the report. You agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the way the report uses statistics, even some of your own studies?
I think that the use of the master tally of suppression orders in Australia, which is data which is compiled by a lawyer at News Corp, to suggest that Victoria makes more suppression orders than any other jurisdiction, I think is problematic. So that data doesn't reflect the actual number of orders that are made, and that's the way it's been presented in the report. Instead, what that data is simply media notifications of suppression orders. Now, there are only two jurisdictions in Australia where all orders are sent to the media as a matter of routine: South Australia, where it's required by law under the Evidence Act, and Victoria, where the orders are emailed to the media as a matter of practice. For each of the other jurisdictions, there is a gross underrepresentation of the actual number of orders that are made. Now, let me give you an example. The report says that there are only a handful of orders made in WA, but the actual true number would be closer to 250, 300. Similarly, when it comes to New South Wales, it's only the Supreme Court that notifies the media. The lower courts don't. But we know that the lower courts make orders at a rate probably similar to what's happening in Victoria. So that data is inherently misleading if it's presented as a final tally of the number of orders that are actually made.
Okay, so these are figures from, I think, 2023, and it has Victoria 521, it has New South Wales 133, and it has Western Australia 2. Michael, how do you respond to those concerns that the statistics cited are not correct or complete, and they give a really misleading idea?
I'd start by saying the point of this report is not to say, and that the report doesn't say, that Victoria is the suppression capital of Australia. It does say that there are more in Victoria, but it qualifies that by saying that these are the ones that are notified. So more broadly, I don't think that's kind of the point of the report. It's setting a scene, if you like. It's unfortunate that we're having this debate. I'm happy to have the debate, but it's unfortunate if the focus goes on the figures rather than on the more substantive issues, which I think are the issues that we agree on.
I think that's right, Michael. I think my concern is that media reports focusing on this report. So I watched the ABC News Bulletin on the day after it was released and said, this report found that Victoria makes more suppression orders than any other jurisdiction. And that was the focus. In your own writing, you focused on these figures in saying that Victoria makes more suppression orders than any other jurisdiction qualifying it and saying that it's based on media notifications. And that is where there is misrepresentation as to what these figures can actually tell us. All they can tell us is the number of orders that have been notified to the media. That is it.
Michael?
Yeah, no, I agree with that, Jason. It is it. But there are a couple of things I would say. I've spoken extensively to media lawyers who work across the country, and in Victoria, they say they have a harder time in the courts than they have in other jurisdictions. For whatever reason, culturally or whatever, they're having a harder time making these arguments, particularly against suppression orders. Secondly, one of them told me, follow the money. The amount of money that national media organisations spend on legal issues, including keeping track of suppression orders in Victoria, is higher than in other jurisdictions. So Jason's totally right. We actually don't know the comparative figures because these are the ones that are reported. I would disagree with one aspect of what you said, in that you said all suppression orders are notified to the media in Victoria as a matter of practice. South Australia is the only jurisdiction where it's required by statute to be notified. Victoria, it is a matter of practice, but I'm told that there are some, we don't know how many, that are missed. We don't know what we don't know.
I would agree with that there are orders that perhaps fall through the cracks and don't get sent to the media. The other thing that this data doesn't reflect are what are known as pseudonym orders. And pseudonym orders are made to require that a person who appears before a court, whether as a witness or as an accused or a victim, will appear under a pseudonym. Now, that operates outside of the Open Courts Act, and those orders are not sent to the media, but they operate in effect as de facto suppression orders. So even these figures, where they are accurately reported and technically all suppression orders are sent to the media, don't capture those orders, and therefore we don't really have a very good picture of what's actually going on. I would also agree with Michael's point that there does seem to be a particular difficulty that the media face in reporting in Victoria. And, you know, you see that in the anecdotal evidence, you see that in discussions with media lawyers where that's clear. My point would be, but that's not a result of the number of suppression orders being made. Because if you compare, for example, South Australia, where we do have complete figures, and you compare that with Victoria, where we also have relatively complete figures, the rate of suppression per capita is much higher in South Australia than it is in Victoria. Now, why Victorian journalists are experiencing such difficulties in dealing with the courts and in being able to report the courts, I believe, doesn't flow from the number of orders that are made. There has to be something else going on in the system. And focusing on the figures detracts from that and from actually uncovering what the problems are.
Okay, let's move on. One final point, Michael. The Chief Justice of Victoria issued a statement following the report. Like all judicial officers, I welcome and encourage scrutiny of judicial decisions. Regrettably, this report gives a misleading and selective picture. Michael, if the goal was to have a dialogue with the courts and to kind of get them to shift their thinking, was the report an own goal? Does this issue around the way the statistics have been reported amplify a view that some might have about journalists and the media being prepared to be inaccurate or self-serving in the way they construct things?
I'd say two things to that. One is that genuinely this report was not focused on the figures. The figures were a background to the report, and it's unfortunate, as I say, that it's kind of dominating the discussion a little bit like this. The second thing is that I think the report shows the judicial officers the frustrations that journalists are having with doing their public interest reporting. And yes, it says those things in a robust way, but we have tried through background briefings and so forth to get these messages to judges. It hasn't worked. So I don't think it's our job to just work behind the scenes. Speaking from the Melbourne Press Club, we are getting into advocacy for the cause of journalism and public interest journalism. And this was our attempt to bring that into the public. I think it's been successful, notwithstanding the argument we're now having about these figures.
Okay, Damien Carrick with you. This is the Law Report on ABC Radio National. Today we're talking suppression orders with one of Australia's leading investigative journalists, Michael Bachelard, and also with suppression law expert, Associate Professor Jason Bosland. Now, one of the reasons suppression orders are front of mind here in Victoria is the recent criminal trial of Tom Silvani, who in December last year was found guilty of two counts of rape. He is appealing the decision and he maintains his innocence. I want to make that very clear. Michael, for those outside of Victoria, who is Tom Silvani?
Tom Silvani is the son of a very well-known Carlton football player, and therefore, in the kind of world of Victoria, which is obsessed with AFL, you know, he's the son of a very prominent person.
Like you say, he's the son of footballer Stephen Silvani and the grandson of Sergio Silvani, I think. And also his mum is TV personality and game show host Joe Silvani, formerly Joe Bailey. So these are very kind of prominent, highly successful people. And for 18 months until the guilty verdict, his legal team succeeded in suppressing his identity because of the impact it would have on his mental health. Jason, what were the successful arguments which allowed for the suppression of his identity all the way until his guilty verdict?
Sure. Well, in the magistrate's court, the argument was that because of the mental health consequences of publicity, that there would be a threat or that would cause harm to Tom Silvani's safety.
So he might commit self-harm or suicide.
Sure. Yep. Or there'd be some sort of psychological harm that met a threshold that was considered essentially to be unacceptable. And that was made on under a particular ground in the Open Courts Act called the safety ground for our purposes. When it went to the county court, that order continued only for 3 months and then it had to be revisited, and a fresh application was made by Tom Silvani's counsel, and that was also made under the safety ground, relying upon similar arguments in the magistrate's court. That order was rejected by the county court judge. There was then an appeal or a judicial review to the Supreme Court. It was remitted back to the county court to remake the decision because it was found to have been an error of law. What happened was that application was abandoned and a fresh application was made, relying upon the same mental health arguments, but a different ground in the Open Courts Act. It was the administration of justice ground. And the argument went like this: because of the adverse publicity that would flow from the case, that would have consequences for Tom Sulbany's mental health to such a degree that it would hinder his ability to effectively instruct his legal counsel and also to properly participate in the trial. And that was considered to be an interference with the administration of justice.
It was perhaps the worst kept secret in Victoria because a lot of people were accessing this information on social media. They weren't getting it from the established media channels, but it was out there online. Michael, what are your views about this particular suppression order and the granting of suppression orders on these mental health grounds?
I think before I wade in and say that was a terrible decision, which I think it was, and other judges, including former Justice Betty King, have agreed with that, I will say that I don't want to, and the newspaper and the Melbourne Press Club do not want to downplay the issue of mental health. We just don't think that having a line that was intended really to protect witnesses in, say, gangland cases and the like on their physical safety should be kind of twisted out of shape to apply to mental health grounds. And that if we want to address mental health, we should do it in a more comprehensive way and a thoughtful way legislatively. So I'll say that up front. But this is the tip of a much broader iceberg. The number of these cases has exploded in recent years, that it's usually only available to people who have the money to hire specialised lawyers who run these kinds of cases. And we know this because we have a document from a set of lawyers, an 11-page document, which actually instructs their fellow lawyers in how to suppress somebody's name from the point at which they're charged, and in this case, till after Tom Sulbany was convicted, and to keep it mum under the mental health ground, and, you know, tactics of how to do that and to essentially conspire with police to keep the name out of the media from the moment that they walk into the police station and get charged. So these developments are worrying. They look like, they feel like a gaming of the system of the Open Courts Act, and it's being done by high-profile people.
And it advantages people with the wealth to get the multiple psychiatric and psychological reports and to hire the legal teams who are very much focused on these arguments.
Precisely. Your poor little, Agberg kid from Dandenong is not going to be able to avail himself of this.
Michael, you mentioned Justice Betty King. She's a retired Supreme Court justice, very highly respected legal figure in Victoria. She spoke at the launch of the Melbourne Press Club report that we were talking about earlier. What did she say about these mental health suppression orders?
She was pretty strong on them. She said that she thought they were mostly rubbish and that the system was being gamed. She said she blamed the psychiatrists, who are the ones who are prepared to give reports sort of expressing a serious fear for somebody's mental health. And under the Act, or under the practice around this legislation, if you're going to go for a suppression order, you need to prove it's necessary and to the satisfaction of the court, and you need to prove that it's, and in part of doing that, is that the harm is going to be substantial. And so I guess the implication of what Betty was saying was that people are sort of overblowing these concerns to get these orders. And she also described some of her fellow she's a former judicial officer. She described some of the judicial officers as dills and said that that needed to be looked at.
She said in an op-ed piece in The Age, quote, "I doubt that many people's mental health is in a good condition after they have been charged with serious crimes." So, presumably you have, of course, that mental health concern on the one hand, but you also have this idea of open justice about the courts being open on the other, and there's always going to be a tension there.
I guess the question there is, to what extent does media coverage exacerbate the mental health issues that they might be facing as a result of being charged? And does that exacerbation make it necessary to suppress the whole thing right up to and past conviction?
Jason, you're nodding your head there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the criticisms around these types of orders being made on the safety ground are absolutely legitimate. The other point that I'd make is that it's very, very difficult for both a media lawyer and also a judge when they're faced with one of these applications, because you've got a media lawyer who potentially will have to cross-examine a psychiatrist or a psychologist on the evidence they've given as to the mental health consequences of publicity, and it's very hard to challenge that evidence. A judge, on the other hand, faced with that evidence and asked whether or not, you know, they should grant the order, well, there is kind of a natural tendency to say, well, I don't want disastrous consequences on my hands. I'm going to grant the order. So I have some sympathy for the judges, particularly in the magistrates' court. You know, they've got so many cases to hear in a day. They're under pressure. They're overworked. So I can see the system breaking down when it comes to these types of applications and perhaps the evidence not being scrutinised in the way that we would like.
What are the ways forward here? Sonia Kilkenny is the State Attorney General, is now considering changes to the Open Courts Act, specifically 18.1, section 18, subsection 1, which is the one we've been talking about. What's being proposed? Do we know?
Well, yes, a group of the sort of senior editorial leaders in Victoria from across the spectrum wrote a letter to Sonia Kilkenny a couple of weeks ago, and their proposed amendment was quite simple. It was to amend 18.1A, which is the mental health ground, from the order being necessary to protect the safety of any person and mental health being read into that, to the order is necessary to protect the physical safety of any person from a real and substantial risk from another person. So that suggested amendment takes into account the original reason, I think, for the safety ground being put in, which was that if I'm going to give evidence and some gangland figure is going to come and murder me, a real fear, by the way, in Victoria's gang war, to get it back to its original purpose.
So to take out the mental health safety aspect?
Well, mental health's not
the self-harm or the deterioration of somebody's mental health?
Well, mental health is not actually mentioned in the Act. It's just the safety of a person. And that's been used to read mental health in. Now, the editors are not, and I'm speaking here for the editors, I guess not for the Melbourne Press Club, but the editors are not saying, let's ignore mental health entirely. What they're saying is, if we are to do something about mental health, let's do it specifically, thoughtfully in the legislation rather than just reading in to this ground that was designed for something else.
Can I respond, just a very short response? The proposal that's been put forward will be successful, obviously, in preventing the safety ground from being relied upon in the context of these mental health arguments, but it's not going to close off the Silvani-type scenario. And the reason why it's not going to do that is because the order that was ultimately granted in the county court in the Silvani case was actually under a different ground in the Act. It was under the administration of justice ground. So my view is that if we don't address those arguments being made both with respect to the safety ground and also with respect to the administration of justice ground, what's going to happen is all those orders that were applied for under Section 18.1C, the safety ground, are simply going to be applied for under Section 18.1A, the administration of justice ground. So I think there needs to be a different approach to the reform, meeting the same objective that the editors have suggested, but I just don't think this legislative change is going to work. The other is that if it's changed from the physical safety of any person from a real and substantial risk from another person, that closes off the possibility that orders might be made to protect vulnerable witnesses and victims. Now, as Michael has said, that might be the subject of a separate consideration and a separate ground in the Act, but I think we need to really reflect on whether or not that's what we want.
Okay, so I guess what you're saying is maybe there's still some way to go in terms of formulating the wording which would achieve the goal that you both want to see. But do you think that's achievable?
I think it is, yes.
Okay. One of the other issues is that the media does not have a lot of money these days to go in and challenge every suppression order. One of the other proposals that, Michael, you want us to consider and Jason, you want us to consider is the establishment of an open justice advocate. What would their role be and how might they even up the playing field here?
When a suppression order is being considered and the Open Courts Act is in play, the judge kind of has to have a presumption of the public interest that the court be open. That has to be the presumption. I think what we're saying here is that culturally, for whatever reason, that presumption has been eroded in Victoria, and I'm speaking for Victoria only, not other states. So you're right, the media can't get into court and oppose all these things, even if we're told about them, which often we're not. So a suggestion that's been made and that I think is a good idea is to have a contradictor, somebody who's there to speak on behalf of the public interest. Now, a few years ago when Jason and I collaborated on a story to kind of ventilate some of these issues, the then Chief Justice Marilyn Warren of the Supreme Court suggested to the bar that perhaps they might like to act pro bono as contradictors in some of these cases, and I don't think she got a very enthusiastic take-up of that. Betty King, again, the other night said, terrific idea, perhaps we should put that. I think we are now trying to sort of arrange some meetings with court officials to kind of put that as an idea. But if we believe, as I think we should and must, that open justice is a public good and a something to be striven for in our democracy, then somebody who can speak on its behalf in a court, I think, is a very important question. And it's too important to leave to private, financially struggling media companies.
I completely agree that with the idea of the introduction of an open justice advocate. The point about there not being an effective contradictor, I think, is quite right. Historically, the media have played two roles when it comes to open justice. It's reporting the courts and being the conduit between the courts and the public, but then also acting as the guardian of the very principle of open justice. Now, as revenues decline in the media landscape, the media have less and less money to pay the big bucks to send lawyers down to court to fight these orders. And so someone needs to step in, and I think the state has an obligation to take measures to protect the fundamental principle of open justice. Now, I see that through a constitutional lens, because if you think about the three arms of government, you've got the legislature, which is held to account democratically and also by the courts in terms of not overstepping the legislative power. The executive is held to account by the legislature and also by the courts in not overstepping the exercise of executive power. The main way in which the courts are held to account in that system is through transparency and openness. So in terms of maintaining the checks and balances on the different arms of government, I think open justice is imperative. I would like to see the introduction of an open justice advocate who is completely independent from government and also from the courts, and they play a dual role. They play a role of overseeing open justice within the jurisdiction, so reporting to Parliament on how many suppression orders are made, how the system's working or not working, but then also appearing in court as a contradictor where the media are now unable to do it. This isn't to suggest that the media shouldn't continue to play that role when they can, but there needs to be an office there or a public officer who can go down to court and say, hey, this principle needs to be respected, and to advocate on behalf of the principle of open justice. So that's how I would say it.
In conclusion, how quickly do you think there might be progress in changing the situation here in Victoria, Michael?
Well, it seems to me the Silvani case has acted as a bit of a lightning rod for some of these issues, and I hope there may be some government will to change the legislation to some extent. The cultural issues that we've identified, I think, in our report are much deeper and will take longer.
Jason, a final word?
Look, my view is that there needs to be some fairly urgent reforms, I think, but then there also needs to be a broader look at the Act, because we can't address everything quickly. Obviously, I think there are so many issues with this, with the way in which things are, with the status quo, that I think we actually need a broader review. And, you know, things like access to documents, you know, which currently fall outside the scope of the Open Courts Act. There's a huge problem in Victoria with journalists not being able to access documents. And you can, you know, make contrasts with the position in other jurisdictions, and it's just, you know, it's really stark. So I think that needs to be looked at, definitely.
Okay. Associate Professor Jason Bosland, an expert in suppression orders based at Melbourne University Law School, and Michael Bachelard, one of Australia's most senior investigative reporters, works for The Age, president of the Melbourne Press Club and winner of many awards, including the Gold Walkley. Thank you both for speaking to The Law Report today.
Thanks, Damien.
Thank you.
That's all we've got time for this week. If you want another take on the issues that we've been discussing today, we've got a link to this week's ABC's Media Watch on our website. Do follow The Law Report on ABC Listen. That way you'll get to the latest podcast as soon as it becomes available. A big thanks to producer Christina Kukolia and also to audio producer Ari Gross. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk soon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.